The Mike Lupica Podcast.
We are back now with the great Mike Lupica. He's one of the country's
most prominent sports columnists. Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A $1 billion industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today, we are joined again by one of the best in the NBA information circles and one of the best writers about the NBA. You read him on the Atlantic. You hear him on ESPN's Around the Horn, on PTI. He has his own radio Sirius XM show, The Starting Lineup, and he's here to talk about the Knicks and much more. He's my pal, Frank Isola. But before we get started with Frank, I want to tell you about Kronos. Okay, it's day one for a new employee. But instead of joining in productively, they face a confusing, disjointed process, piles of paper forms. With Kronos, you can automate the entire onboarding process, creating a better experience for employees and freeing you to focus on the human part of your job. HR, payroll, talent, timekeeping in one unified system, all with proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at Kronos.com/onboarding. Kronos, workforce innovation that actually works. Welcome back to the Mike Lupica Podcast. And I'm going to tell you right straight up, now that we're doing this 2 a week, you're going to hear from time to time from my pal Frank Isola, because A, he's a great guest. He's been my friend for a long time. We were colleagues at the New York Daily News. You can now read him in The Athletic. You can see him guest hosting on Pardon the Interruption. You see him on Around the Horn. You listen to him on his own show on Sirius XM Radio. And why is Frank back today? Because the owner of the Knicks has once again been in the news over the last week. And Frankie, before we get to James Dolan, welcome back. And second of all, there's news from the NBA coming from the other coast today.
Yeah, really interesting. And how you doing, Mike? Out of the LA Times, they actually got copies of emails because there's some lawsuit going on between the Forum and the city of Englewood. So they have these emails between Jeannie Buss and Irving Azoff, who's acting on behalf of Jim Dolan. It's something about trying to get the Lakers to move back to the Forum. It has something to do with the arena deal that the Clippers are trying to get, because they're trying to move to Englewood to get out of Staples Center. But it really kind of comes across like two NBA franchises are kind of colluding to hurt another one. So this is going to be a big story over the coming days. I don't think there's any question about that.
And I'm reading from the story in the LA Times. The byline is Nathan Fenno. Okay. And it outlines what Frank is talking about. But I'm quoting from Mr. Fenno's story, but the emails obtained by the Times revealed the depth of the business competition between the LA's two NBA teams, and that Jeannie Buss didn't hesitate to discuss a move that would have left the Staples Center and downtown Los Angeles without its marquee tenant. And then here's the quote from the team. MSG, Madison Square Garden, you can't make this crap up, Frankie. MSG approached the Lakers about the possibility of returning to the Forum following the end of our lease at Staples Center in 2025, but nothing came from the discussions. Yeah, right.
You know, it's amazing, Mike, too, because as you know, Irving Azoff, who, you know, the famous music manager, he managed the Eagles, he's basically the one that brokered the deal between Jim Dolan and the Knicks and Phil Jackson. And it's all kind of tied together because Phil was dating Jeannie Buss at the time. Linda Rambis, who's an executive in the Lakers front office, her husband is Kurt Rambis. So Kurt Rambis and Phil ended up coming to New York. And when that didn't work out, now Kurt Rambis, I guess, is serving as an advisor and some coaching advisor with the Lakers. And I'm not sure with Phil. I don't think Phil does have a role. But I have heard that Phil has been at some of their practices. I have to be honest with you, when it comes to the Lakers, and you know, Phil is, you know, clearly getting up there in age. His health hasn't been great. But would it be the craziest thing if Phil Jackson were to be the coach of the Lakers again? I don't necessarily think it would be. I don't know if that would be LeBron's first choice, because he and LeBron had a bit of a a falling out, but LeBron might look at it kind of as, well, you know, he did coach Michael Jordan and he did coach Kobe Bryant and he's loved here in LA. Maybe this is worth trying. So I'm not saying it's going to happen, but crazier things, as you know, have happened in the NBA. I would not entirely rule it out.
We're talking to my pal Frankie I saw on the Mike Lupica podcast. Frank, the Lakers fascinate me because I keep asking this question. And now I'm going to ask you, what have Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka and even Jeannie Buss ever done to show the world that they have the management chops to build build a championship team with the Los Angeles Lakers? And I think LeBron, Frankie, might be starting to look around and think, maybe this time I took the wrong plane.
And it's a great call. And I also think we know that it's a great move getting LeBron James. So right there, they're going to get an A in free agency for getting LeBron. But it's almost fair to say to LeBron, all right, LeBron, we got you. Now you're the one now that has to do everything. So did LeBron have some of the input maybe in the roster construction? Perhaps, but it still has to fall on them. They haven't done enough. It is the Western Conference. And, you know, you do need more talent there. So this thing, there's no other way to look at it. You get LeBron James on your team, at the very least, you have to be a playoff team. They will not be a playoff team this year. That makes it a complete disaster. And this summer will be huge for them. And when you talk to people around the league and they look at the Lakers and they think, well, you have, you know, Jeannie Buss, and she's got, you know, Linda Rambis and probably Luke Walton is kind of in that camp. And then you have Rob Pelinka and you have Kobe Bryant and then you have LeBron James and Rich Paul. And then you have Magic Johnson, his, you know, group of loyalists. So it's almost like you have like these four factions. And I think at times it's difficult to run an organization like that. They were better off when they said, Jerry West, you run our team. You be the basketball guy. And that seemed to work out pretty well there. And now what are they going on, 6 straight years without making the playoffs? I mean, Mike, this is the Lakers we're talking about. Think about that. Not even going to be a playoff team with the guy that is arguably still the best player in the league. It's hard to fathom.
Again, when players, you know, for all the talk about L.A. still being a destination point, and obviously it was for LeBron, but for Frankie, not entirely basketball reasons. I mean, LeBron wants to be in the entertainment world. He wants to be a movie mogul. He wants to be a television mogul. We get that, okay? And I think he wanted to raise his kids out there. Fine. I'm a great admirer of his, okay? I'm just talking about other players looking at the organization, looking at the hierarchy. And when I look at the hierarchy, what I see, Frankie, is a bit of a mess. And I've known Magic Johnson since he was in college. Okay. I like him a lot. But what has he ever done to indicate that he's a great basketball executive?
No, I think you're 100% right. And, you know, when you look at the name on the front of the jerseys, it's Lakers. But let's think about what's going on behind the scenes and look at the other organization in LA. The fact that you have Doc Rivers there, championship coach, the fact that you have Jerry West there, unquestioned, you know, arguably the greatest executive in the history of the sport. They kind of have the infrastructure there.
Well, wait, Red Auerbach was the greatest executive.
All right. I'm sorry. Modern day.
Okay.
But if you look at, I mean, in fact, who's still working. So you still have Jerry West there, but you know, you have, you know, the people in place that have done it before, and they traded away their best player. And it looks like they're going to be a playoff team this year. So when you talk about going to L.A., and I understand that the Lakers have all the history, but the Clippers are actually set up better right now to be successful. They're successful right now, and they don't even have LeBron James on their team. So Paul George didn't give them a meeting. They met with LaMarcus Aldridge twice, and he didn't go.
Yep.
So they really haven't been landing that big guy. And then you hear Kawhi Leonard, if he leaves Toronto, people think he's going to L.A. and he's going to go to the Clippers. So that Laker mystique and brand, the one that you and I know about, I'm not so sure as of right now. Now, I'm willing to wait until this summer to see what happens. But as of right now, I'm not so sure it exists like it did 80s, 90s, and the 2000s when it was Kobe and Shaq and then Pau Gasol and Kobe.
They want to win. Players want to win. And LeBron had a right to think, you know, and put me down, Frankie, you know how often we've had this conversation, that I thought LeBron could go to a local Y or go down to West 4th Street in New York City and find 4 pretty good guys and make the playoffs. Well, guess what? I was wrong about that. He couldn't make the playoffs this year. Maybe it would have been different if he hadn't gotten hurt for a month, but he did. Okay. But if I made you bet your own money right now, where do you think Kevin Durant's going to play basketball next year?
I think it's going to be one of two places. I think the Knicks are definitely in play, or I've heard this scenario thrown out before. Brian Scalabrine, my co-host on the show, has mentioned this. The idea of him signing that big extension with the Golden State Warriors, with the understanding that if at some point during those 5 years, I would think it would be more on the shorter side of it or the start of it, maybe year two or year three into the deal, if he wanted to go somewhere else, they would arrange that for him. It wouldn't be any kind of fighting. They would try to steer him to the place that he wants to go to so he can get his money. I can't believe that Kevin Durant, you know, you're in a situation, and our buddy Jeff Van Gundy said this in November, don't get sick of winning. And right yep. now they have a winning team. And I get it, you're up and down, whatever the case may be. But you're in one of the greatest basketball situations that any player has been in the last 50 years. You already have two championships in your back.
And your arena is moving into...
Thank you.
And you got your arena is moving into one of the great cities. And nothing wrong with Oakland. I love Oakland, okay? They're moving to downtown San Francisco.
And this is what would worry me. And I get it. If you're the Knicks, you're the Knicks fan, you're gonna meet Kevin Durant at the airport if he wants to come play. You're going to welcome him with open arms. I understand that. But there has to be a part of you, if you're being honest with yourself, why does he want to come here? He can't be saying he wants to come here for basketball reasons. Now, could he change the basketball situation? Absolutely. Could he change the landscape in New York? Absolutely. As my dog goes nuts,
it's
here.
Okay. We Tyler Brewer, my producer, and I, we love having dogs on the show.
So, you know, what would be the reason he'd want to go there? And is he going for the reasons that LeBron went to L.A.? Is he looking at it from a standpoint of, this is about building my brand, building my empire? Knock yourself out. Go do that. But just know this. You come to New York, the Knicks fans are not going to judge you on how big your brand became and how many other business opportunities you had. They're going to be judging you on basketball. You're not going to get any off days, Kevin Durant. You're going to have to be the leader of the team. You're going to have to put up with a lot of nonsense. Are you up for that? If you are, great. If not, let's be careful. And that's what worries me about when I hear Kevin Durant linked to the Knicks. Is basketball the number one reason he wants to come here? Because if I'm the Knicks, I want that to be the number one reason. Mike, it's the same thing with the Laker fans. Do Laker fans care that LeBron James wants to have a footprint in Hollywood? What do they care about that? They're thinking, I'm looking at Kareem, Magic Johnson, James Worthy, Kobe, Shaq. We want you to bring us a championship. I don't care that maybe one day you might be nominated for an Academy Award. They don't care about stuff like that.
We're talking to Frank Isola on the Mike Lubega podcast. Again, if you're not reading him in The Athletic, you're missing a guy who writes about the NBA as well as anybody. Frank, you're 100% right. And guess what Kevin Durant also wouldn't be able to do if he came to New York? Pout. Publicly pout. Or say, I don't like those questions, or I'm mad at you today. Because he'll be on the back and front pages for a couple of days, and he won't like it. Because he's...
And guess what else he won't have, Mike? A nice hit, even if he brings one more guy with him. But there's going to be a lot of nights where he's going to look and say, oh, Steph Curry will carry us in this quarter, or maybe it'll be Klay Thompson. You're not going to have that anymore. You know, you're going to have to be the guy a majority of the time, and you have to be up for that. Hopefully he has a long conversation with guys like Patrick Ewing, who have actually been through it and have won here and had to deal with a lot of nonsense. He should, you know, as opposed to meeting with CEOs of companies, meet with guys that have been here and have done it and have won here.
Frank, when you look at him and you look at his current circumstances, and I understand that he's resistant to the notion that he went to the Warriors for easy titles. You know, we've talked about that to a fairly well, okay? Who would want to leave that situation? You're talking about the opportunity to not only win your fourth title in 5 years this year, okay, but to continue winning. I'm not saying they're going to end up winning like Russell Celtics did in another world in the NBA, but they could win as many titles as Michael Jordan did. And you know, they could still kick themselves for the one they didn't win because Draymond got suspended. But you look at them last night and you see how deep they are. Frank, they beat the Rockets on the road without Durant. And you know how many guys they had in double figures? Three. They had three guys in double figures, except Boogie Cousins really joined the season last night and showed the rest of the world what he might be like when they get to the playoffs. Who walks away from a situation like that?
And we've seen this with great teams before, you know, where after a while everybody's getting on each other's nerves. It happens. but you're winning though. Well, why do you think the situation would be better with a losing team? And he's in such a great position because with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, you and I have talked about this before, you know, the sons of former NBA players, yep. They don't get wrapped up in all the nonsense. They don't care about their brand and being the face of the team. And it has to be my team and all this other nonsense. All they want to do is win. And if you're Kevin Durant, you left for this reason. You left to join this ensemble cast. And guess what? You've been the guy that's been getting a lot of the glory. Are you getting a lot of the grief? Absolutely, because everyone's still getting on you for the fact that you left Oklahoma City. 10, 20, 30 years from now, if you have four championships on your resume, that's what people are going to remember. If it was all about going there and winning championships, that's what you're doing. And I heard off the court he's got a ton of stuff going on with Silicon Valley. He's making money left and right. Like, why? It doesn't seem to make sense on why he would want to leave, especially when there's a chance to keep this thing going, because it doesn't look like it's going to work out for LeBron in L.A. And there are some very good teams in the Western Conference, but the class is Golden State. Last week, Golden State loses to the Celtics. Had that terrible performance. Steve Kerr sounds the alarms. What do they do on Friday night? National TV, they beat Denver. Then on Sunday, they get Phoenix in their building. They lay an egg. What do they do prior to their game against Houston? Another nationally televised game, big opponent, playoff ramifications. If Houston had won the game, they'd be within 2.5 games. Steve Kerr sounds the alarm. They get the job done. I get it, and you know this better than anybody. Going through the rigors of an 82-game season is not easy, especially for teams that know they have the shortest vacation of everybody. They're going to be playing into June. But it does seem like this week there were two times when it was like a big thing for them. The Friday night game against the Nuggets, and the second-place team in the division, and then the third-place team in the conference, Houston last night, and they got the job done. Like, that's why when I look at the Warriors, when push comes to shove, you still got to beat them four times.
Frankie, Kevin Durant is going to be 31 when he starts his next NBA season. Does he really want to go now at that age and be a franchise builder? And that's one question. Second one is, are you buying the story that there was a secret meeting with Durant and the Knicks in January?
Nah, I would think that Kevin Durant would be smarter than that. You know, his agent, Rich Kleiman, attends Knicks games. Do I think that, you know, Steve Mills and maybe Jim Dolan spoke to Rich Kleiman? They're allowed to do that. And, you know, and let's say there was Kevin Durant's name came up. I don't know how you can prove that unless Rich Kleiman were to tell you. So this stuff goes on all the time in terms of the agents of players talking with teams. That's why on July 1st, you know, guys are signing at some point during that day. How did that all came about? Because yeah, they just got together on July 1st. But to actually believe that Kevin Durant sat down somewhere and met with, say, Jim Dolan or Steve Mills, people in the Knicks organization, I find that a little hard to believe.
Talking to my pal Frankie Isola, just as good as you could read or see talking about basketball on television or the radio. All right, what an interesting week for the New York Knicks. It effectively begins with a fan leaning over after a game and telling James Dolan to sell the team. They briefly engage. There's a hilarious video where they say, "Hold him for Kevin." And Frankie, you know this. All I know is, I will know my life has taken a wrong turn if I ever hear you're being held for Kevin. We're in the same lane on this. We do not want to have to mess with Kevin. Would you agree with that?
I've already had nightmares in my ears. Someone saying hold him for Kevin. I wake up in a cold sweat. I'm with you on that one. You don't want to be held for Kevin.
So the guy ends up being banned from the Garden. And, you know, this in the shadow of what happened with the Knicks and Charles Oakley. And then James Dolan, the owner, goes on Michael Kay's radio TV show the other day. And Frank, we didn't know that he was ambushed by this fan who, by the way, didn't say the things that Russell Westbrook alleges a fan said to him in Houston the other night. He leaned over and he said, he didn't say sell the effing team. He just said sell the team.
I know. And wouldn't Jim Dolan have been better served? I get it. In that moment, who knows how you would act. But you wonder if he had said, make me a good offer. Or we got something coming for you next year. You'll be changing your mind by next season.
Yep.
As opposed to saying what he said to the guy. And, you know, can you say the fans being a little obnoxious? Yes. Do people record everything now on their phones? Jim Dolan should know that by now. It's not the worst thing. And to be fair, you've given New York – And I understand that if I have to hear one more time how he spends money, he wants to win. Mike, 25 of the 30 teams in the NBA spend money. Can we stop there, please? Oklahoma City is one of the smallest markets. They're paying Paul George $200 million for crying out loud. So every owner in 25 of the 30 owners are willing to spend money, and all of them want to win. Clearly, his way is not working. And now after 18 years of giving, you know, Knicks fans the worst record in the NBA, to have one person yell, sell the team, and like, as you said, not use profanity, not jump in his face or ambush him, as Jim Dolan said, I think you have to – is it going to be pleasant? No. Is it the worst thing that can happen to you? I hardly think so. And to use the word ambush, to me, it's just strange because 2 years earlier, you know, they sent five people to confront Charles Oakley, and that ended with, you know, guys wrestling and them handcuffing him, getting him out of the arena. That looks more like an ambush than what happened to Jim Dolan. And then for him to describe it like that and then to go on that rant about the Daily News, and let's face it, he's referring to the current beat writer there, Stephen Bondi, but he's also referring to you and myself as well. Yeah. And I started questioning my coverage. I said, you know what, maybe I've been negative. And I went back and I looked in the 90s, and I had to go back and read your stories. And the weird thing was, Mike, you writing stories about the Knicks, it always seemed to coincide with how the team did on the court. It's the weirdest thing. I feel like I'm explaining it to like a fifth grader. When the team does well, the coverage tends to be what they would consider positive. And when the team does poorly, and I'll give you an example, 15 of the last 18 years, the coverage tends to be what they would consider negative. So now every fifth grader, plus the owner of the Knicks, hopefully they understand that, Mike.
We're talking to Frank. I saw Frank, and I don't even have to. It's not worth it because he won't understand what you're saying.
He won't.
Okay.
It's certainly beneath you to discuss. I get it. It just angers me to no end because it's so incredibly unfair because it's calling into question your integrity. And it took me 2 seconds to find a column that I wrote about him from about 4 or 5 years ago when I praised him for guaranteeing victory. And I had some fun with the comment. I said, hey, at least the owner of the Knicks is holding his team up to a high standard. I said, this is a good thing that he did that. It took me 2 seconds to Google something where I wrote, forget about the coverage of the Knicks, where I wrote something nice about him.
We're talking with the great Frankie Isola on the Mike Lupica podcast. More with Mr. Isola in a moment. But first, this from Geico. There's a quick way you could save money. Just switch to Geico. All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And Geico offers coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? Geico's got you covered. Got an RV? Covered. Got a boat? Covered. How about a homeowner's or renter's insurance? You bet Geico's got you covered. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's geico.com. Frank, you can go back and look. And I say this all the time. And people even, you know, the Yahoos out there, they don't understand this. Okay. For literally 10 years. Okay. From the time David W. Checkets hired Pat Riley. Frank knows this. I know this. New Yorkers who love basketball know this. Did the Knicks win a championship in the 90s? They did not. They went to the finals twice. They went to game 7 against the Rockets in 94. They were ahead 3-2. For those 10 years, I get tired of saying this, but you have to reset this sometimes. The Knicks were the hottest ticket in New York sports. Not the Giants, not the Jets. Joe Torre's Yankees came along in the middle of that decade, and even Joe used to know the baseball season didn't really begin in New York till the Knicks had played their last game. And Frank covered we wrote the game stories. I wrote the comms. They were on the front page. They were on the back page. No one. No other paper, and the Post has always historically been a basketball paper. No one celebrated this experience more than Frank Isola and I did. Nobody did, okay? And it wasn't just us. Philip Bondi was a columnist, Stefan's dad, all that stuff, okay? Now, what changed over the last 20 years with James Dolan calling the shots at the Garden? They have won one playoff series. People outside of New York can't process this. We're not talking about the Kings or the Timberwolves here. We're talking about the New York Knicks. They have won one playoff season. They have had one effectively decent season under Mike Woodson when they won 54 games. This has been a biblical stretch, and it has been littered with court cases and bad hires and bad decisions and enmity and bad feelings making the Garden, even as people still call it the basketball mecca, such a toxic place. And the way they treated you when you refuse, it's like you were supposed to not look at what was happening on the court. Frank, you know, there was a night in the playoffs where I showed up and I, after 10 years where I, when the press table was still on the court, where I sat next to Van Gundy and Riley, they said, oh yeah, we have a seat for you at the top of the building. And yeah. And that is how they retaliated. Frank endured much worse than I did. Much worse. And so to blame this on the Daily News makes this guy sound like Captain Queeg.
I don't even know if there's much I can add to that. I think you're 100% right. And it's funny, too. Now listen, we know that we have to put up with nonsense on the job. They admitted once that they had security guards following me around the arena. He's talking about that he was being stalked at the end of the game. So I thought that was precious. And I always say this, too. I guarantee you, I know for a fact that we've been more fair with Jim Dolan and more unbiased with him than he's been with us. There's no middle ground when it comes to Jim Dolan the way that he's dealt with us, where this is the weird thing, and I try to tell people this all the time. They keep score in the NBA. That's how they judge success. It's on who wins the games, and then at the end of 82 games, who's won the most, and then the top 8 teams from each conference get into a playoffs. So nothing else matters. We could spin, we can go along with it and spin things, and there have been years where they didn't make the playoffs where there were good things that happen. But it still comes down to results. It's not about, you know, when Forbes magazine comes out and says, what, you know, which franchise is valued the highest, the Knicks. Knicks fans don't throw a parade for that. They're going to throw a parade when they win a championship. And I just can't believe that after all these years that Jim Dolan doesn't understand it's a results thing. And fans and media have a right to be critical when there's been more failure than success. And that's why when I watched that interview with him and Michael Kay, it's almost like Jim Dolan is most passionate only about the criticism
right.
that is being directed at him by whether it's the media or the fans. Like, Mike, if you were getting on David Fizdale, you think Jim Dolan is going to get that upset about it? I'm sure he probably wouldn't want that for David Fizdale. That's not going to get his ire up. Or, you know, the years that players on the team like Carmelo Anthony. Where was he when Phil Jackson was killing Carmelo Anthony all the time? Was he stepping in then? Going on the radio saying this was wrong? Jim Dolan makes it a little too much about himself, and he feels like he should be immune from getting criticized. Jim, that's not the way it works. It's 18 years, one playoff series victory. Just look at it at the results. Stop making it all the time about being personal, because it isn't. It's about the results, and the results, there's no arguing with it. As your buddy Bill Parcells said, you are what your record says you are. Look at the record.
Frank, we're talking Frank Gasol, the Mike Lubica podcast. All he has to do is go back when they did have a 54-28 team, when they did win the Atlantic Division, when Carmelo finished third in the MVP vote, when,
that's right.
when J.R. Smith was sixth man of the year. We were all celebrating that because we thought they were going to play the LeBrons in the East in the playoffs.
Mike, no one wrote better columns about Mike Woodson, the head coach, than you did.
I wanted him to do well. He's one of the best people I've ever met. And even the next year, Frank, even the next year, when Woody, you knew Woody was on the way out because Phil was on his way in, and they should have been dead in the playoff thing. And I think they won 16 out of their last 21 games.
That's right.
Grinding
and
away.
The players probably knew he wasn't going to be the coach either. And they still won all those games.
But when I go back and talk about the 90s, I'm not defending myself to James Dolan. He's not worthy of that. But what I'm saying is Pete Hamill has always said that Madison Square Garden should be one of the main plazas of the city. And guess what? It was for 10 years and nobody loved it more than we did, because guess what? Everybody was reading our stuff because they felt like we were all in it together.
Yeah, that's right. And it doesn't mean... and. Back then, too, they were held to such a ridiculously high standard. Whenever I see Patrick Ewing, I always kind of have to laugh. And I think about, you know, Patrick, it's about, like, did you get to a final? Did you win a championship? He was always playing hurt. And now, like, the Knicks have 13 wins, and there's so, like, little interest in it that nobody, they don't even get criticized. That's 13 wins, Mike. I mean, think about that. It's going to go down as the worst season in the history of the franchise. And you don't think there should be some type of criticism from something like that? It's just absurd. And you're right. Those years that you're talking about now, and I think you wrote this once before, we're going to look back at it as the glory years of Madison Square Garden. It really has been that.
Frank, it debunked the notion that you have to win a title to make the, those were glory years, as exciting and loud at Madison Square Garden as the Knicks were when they were winning their two championships at the end of the 60s and into the 70s. And so when I see him say the Daily News, and you're right, he's not just talking about Stephan Bondi, who's a terrific reporter and writer. He's talking about you and me. Okay. Hate the Knicks. You know what he ought to do? Call Patrick Ewing. And just ask him the following question. Do you think Mike Lupica and Frank Isola hate the Knicks?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. And that's the thing. You know, we have good relationships with hey, I still have a good relationship with Carmelo and even Kristaps Porzingis. Porzingis didn't win anything in New York. At least Carmelo won a playoff series. You know, you go back and when you do run into these guys over the years, whether it's, you know, Jeff Van Gundy or some of those old-time Knicks, Charles Oakley, Patrick Ewing, Larry Johnson, you know, you always strike up a conversation with them because, you know, we were covering them from October into May and June.
Yep.
Now we say goodbye to everybody in April all the time now, Mike. The vacations are always 5 months long. They used to be, you know, 2.5 months long. Now they're 5 months long for basically 15 of the last 18 years.
And Frank, here's the other thing. And I didn't watch all of the interview because I just got tired of listening to Mr. Dolan say the word right the other day. But there's this idea that when he says, well, I do the same thing with the Knicks as I do with the Rangers. And he acts like the Rangers on his watch have been like the old Montreal Canadiens. Okay.
They've made one
Stanley Cup final. And when they made it to the Stanley Cup finals, you know how many games they got? One.
Yeah. And you and I are both in this situation. We've been with Jim Dolan in private in places. And I've had conversations with him. I've cracked jokes.
I played golf with him one time.
Before. And he's very, very good in those settings. I've seen him on stage at concerts where he engages the crowd. He's very good at that as well. He's not as good as trying to be like the salesman for the team going on radio because he's not comfortable doing that. Number one, it's just like it's not in his blood. So even though he attends every game, like when he had to like go to his notes to mention, you know, Kevin Knox and Mitchell Robinson, Alonzo Trier, it just didn't come across well. So whoever advised him to do that or went along with it, it wasn't good. He's better a lot of times just in a private one-on-one kind of thing. There was a time, Mike, I was walking across 8th Avenue after a game, and a car, like a livery car, was making a right off of 33rd, right past the Garden, onto 8th Avenue.
I know exactly.
The car stops in the middle of the road. The guy in the back seat rolls down the window, and it's Jim Dolan. And he says, what, are you trying to get run over by a car? And I said, brother, can you spare a dime? And he started laughing. He drove off. Those were the kind of interactions I always had. I don't know how it got to this point. I think maybe it did because he probably felt like, well, you guys should be my friends because we've had kind of these moments. We're just judging it on wins and losses. We still have to do our job.
Oh, I think it tore. I think it tore with the Anuka Brown Sanders thing. Okay. Because
yeah.
I mean, here's a woman who accuses one of his top executives of harassment. And what was his solution to that, Frank? To fire her. What did he think was going to happen? Okay. And I know this for a fact. He thinks that my column somehow swayed. I mean, it's just,
I wish I had
that much power, really.
The other thing too, Mike, is the word was that everyone was telling him, you know, this kind of speaks to a bit of his personality. Everyone was telling him, just settle. It'll be over with. Instead, no, he wanted a fight. And so this now case plays out in public. And think about what it did for, you know, Stephon Marbury. Think about what it did for Isaiah Thomas. Think about what it did for the Garden. And also, you know, just like the Knick brand, like a lot of people, you know, got beaten up pretty good in that thing when it just all could have been settled out of court and it would have moved on and that's it. Instead, they went for that trial and it didn't help anybody. And that was really because of Jim Dolan. Like he wanted to fight as opposed to saying, you know what? It's not worth the fight at this point. Let's try to move on.
Talking to Frank Isola on the Mike Lubega podcast. Frank, who is he taking? I mean, I'm not being ironic, I promise. Who's he listening to on PR these days?
I don't think he listens to anybody because I know Barry Watkins is now gone, so he's not listening to him anymore. Because really, you know, except for doing like a couple of interviews where it's going to be set up, like he did the one with ESPN, and then he did one with the Ranger beat writers, and there are only two there. you know, they where they try to make all this stuff seem like it's spontaneous, but it's actually pretty rearranged. The only time that he made, like, public interviews were both on Michael Kay's show, and both were to explain public relation things that were hurting him.
Right.
One was obviously the Charles Oakley thing that was, you know, 2 years ago in January, and the most recent one this week after what happened on Saturday at Madison Square Garden. So the only time he kind of gives like a state of the Knicks is when he's kind of giving like his version of events of some bad PR that he's getting. I think the people that work for him have to realize maybe we just should have handled this in a different way. For him to come out and say, I wanted to meet with the fan, let him meet the players and all this other stuff. Then we went and looked at the video and I was ambushed. I mean, come on. The whole thing is just...
And that the guy sold the video. He made that sound like it was a crime akin to, you know, trying to bribe your kids into college. I mean, he made it sound like Robert Mueller was going to come after this guy because he sold the video to TMZ.
I don't know. Like, what's like the going rate on those videos anyway? How much money really could you have gotten for it? It can't be that big of a deal. And the only reason why the video became a video is because Jim Dolan went back at the guy. And then kind of had like a bit of a smile on his face when he kind of motioned for security. And then you heard the whole, you know, hold him for Kevin. And they grabbed the guy. I mean, he could have diffused the whole situation. And I'm not saying it's easy to ignore it. I think I probably would have said something back. But I don't know if I would have, you know, said, you're done. You're never coming back here. I don't know. Tell him. Make me an offer. Or don't worry, you'll think that I'm the best owner in the league next year. Wait to see what we got for you this summer. Something like that, where it could completely change the perception of him. The video comes out, he looks bad. Then he goes on TV to kind of make it sound like, see, I'm the victim of being ambushed, and he made himself look even worse.
Talking to Frank Isola, he's nice enough to do this on days when he is doing his very fine XM, Sirius XM, the starting lineup show. But all right, just a couple more questions, Frankie. You honestly believe that they're going to be in play for Durant this summer? And Frank, I'm going to tell you right now, if his wingman turns out to be Kyrie, it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting. And my only thing is from the Durant thing, like you've heard this from a lot of people around the league. And the one thing that Jim Dolan did, he kind of strongly indicated that he believes that they're getting somebody. And I give him credit for that. When he started going down that road with Michael Kay, the whole time I'm thinking, he's going to mention a name. And when he mentions a name, not that he can't afford it, but he's going to get hit for tampering by the league. So that was the one thing that he kind of danced around pretty well. He, like, answered the question without really answering it. But he also, he strongly implied that he believes that they're getting somebody. Now, that is not tampering, like I said. He's allowed to believe what he wants to believe, but it does sound like he believes that based on something that somebody told him, whether that's Steve Mills, whether that's maybe an agent for a player, but there's something out there that he believes is going to happen.
And if, guess what? If the Knicks get good again and the Garden's really alive with something other than people who I just don't properly understand why they're still going there, it'll be celebrated. It'll be celebrated all over the place, because I want those fans to have something to care about and root for other than this. What we thought 17-65 under Phil Jackson was going to be the bottom. No, Frankie. No.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Jim Dolan never takes accountability for that. And to just sit here and say, he's done this a bunch of times. I brought Phil. Everybody loved that hire. That's not really true, because we all knew that Phil Jackson, you were going to hire him a coach. All right. He has a track record there. Phil Jackson did not have a track record as an executive, and it's not an easy job, and it's not just sitting back and, you know, deciding we'll try to sign the best player in the league. No, it's about drafting the right players and finding diamonds in the rough. R.C. Buford works harder than anybody. Look at the team that they have this year. I get that they have LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan, but they lost, you know, some players at the start of the season, DeJounte Murray, who got hurt. Like, you would know half the guys in their roster. They do a good job kind of finding these players in all these different places, and they're going to be a playoff team this year. That's what being a GM is. It's not.
What about Danny Ainge?
Danny Ainge is
a gym rat, Frankie.
Yep. He goes to college games all the time. It's a never-ending job. See, Phil, his heart wasn't in it. His heart was in coaching. So once he realized that, like, this isn't me. I don't want to deal with agents, and I don't really have, like, physically, I can't travel all over the place to watch games. I can't stay up that late to watch games. So his thing, that's when he morphed back into his coaching mode, and that's when he ran that triangle camp. Remember, he did that twice, once at the end of the season, once during an all-star break, and then he was advising Jeff Hornacek on what he should be doing. Come on, Mike. For basically the last 2 years of Phil Jackson running the Knicks, he was trying to coach the team from the 15th row at Madison Square Garden.
Frankie, it was like hiring a great singer and tell him to be a tap dancer. That's what happened at Madison Square Garden. And Jim Dolan could have burned $60 million. And now I watch him with Michael Kay and Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg the other day and saying, players know our organization. And I'm thinking, yeah, they do. They do. They're selling an address. That's all they're selling. And they're banking on the fact that they can get one guy to still buy into all the old mythology about Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, that sounds like a good column. I'm going to have to steal it from you.
You got it. Frankie, thank you for doing this, pal. I love talking about the NBA. We'll circle back when we're getting closer to the playoffs. But again, I know you get paid to yak on your own show. So thank you for doing this, pal.
Thanks, Mike. Anytime.
Frank Isola on the Mike Lupica podcast. It was just a perfect time to have Frankie on today. I hadn't even seen the LA Times story, so that's why we started out with that. We do this twice a week now, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and it's show business, it's politics, it's sports, but it's always interesting conversations. So continue to download, continue to subscribe, and we'll talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.